Good afternoon. This is Lisa Niver. I'm the founder of We Said Go Travel and the author of Bravish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. And I am beyond excited and honored to have the most incredible producer joining me today. Tony, thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
I loved meeting you at the Federation event at UTA about your current project, A Small Light. And I know it's available for people to see all over now, but we're definitely going to talk about this show, which I think everybody should watch. I think they should have it in classrooms. I used to teach at Stephen Wise. I taught in Culver City. Everybody needs to see your show. But before we get there, can we tell people you have a long, very prominent, incredible career with movies and television? So can you give people a little bit of background? Who are you?
Well, I am a writer, director, showrunner, my wife Joan and I write as a team, and we have been on such shows as Grey's Anatomy, Madam Secretary. We just created a show for CBS this past year called Fire Country.
Top rated new show of last season.
We're very excited about that. And then A Small Light. And so we came to A Small Light having pretty much spent our entire career in television in network. But A Small Light, which tells the story of Meep Geese, who was Otto Frank's secretary and was instrumental in hiding the Franks as well as the other people in the secret annex. And what Joan and I discovered through our research was that while she and her husband Jan were hiding the Franks, they were also hiding up to 12 other people in and around Amsterdam. And so this, to us, felt like a wonderful opportunity to tell the story of the helpers, of people who, in Amsterdam during World War II, helped to hide Jews. And just tell the story of people who, when faced with bigotry and anti-Semitism, could have chosen to do nothing, but instead chose to go out of their way to help their fellow man. And it really felt like an inspirational story and a way to tell the story of Anne Frank from a different perspective. And so in partnership with Disney Plus and Nat Geo, we created an 8-episode limited series, which is now available on Disney Plus and Hulu, and really has some wonderful performances. And I think the intention was to tell a historical story and wipe away the cobwebs and to really tell it in such a way that felt immediate and vital and exciting.
And it is. It's a phenomenal. I mean, I saw it with an incredible crowd, and my parents actually saw it the following night at Stephen Wise Temple with a big crowd. And everyone I've spoken to about it who's watched it comes away with the same thing, that it's so compelling. And for many of us, I grew up with a lot of education about the Holocaust and knowing about the Frank family, but I had no idea, which was one of the things you guys discussed that night, that she was so young and newly married.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was she and Otto Frank formed this amazing relationship. She was, when he hired her, very young, in her early 20s. By the time he asked her to help hide his family, she was newly married. She was kind of just starting out in life, but was a bit of a hot mess, you know, and in a way that I think feels very relatable. She herself was an immigrant. She was born in Vienna. And after World War I, there was a program to relocate children who were in the war zone to the Netherlands, which had been, they were neutral during World War I. And so they had food and all sorts of services that were available to children. And so there was this kind of strange reverse kinder transport that happened at that time, that we discovered. And Meep was adopted by a Dutch family, and found herself wanting to stay in Holland. And so when she met Mr. Frank, who was an immigrant from Germany, they formed an immediate kinship because they shared a language. And Mr. Frank then used Miep and her husband Jan as what they refer to as their Dutch friends. And so put them in contact with all these other German Jewish immigrants, because Miep and Jan could help them navigate the social mores and the customs of the Netherlands and help them with the language and all of this stuff, so that when it came time for him to ask for her help in hiding his family, she immediately said yes, to the point where he said, no, take a moment, think about it. This is, you could be arrested or killed if you were found hiding Jews. She said, I don't need to think about it. Anyone would do it. Well, we know that not anyone would do it, because not everyone did, but she did. And so our research in the show was really about why. Why was she so open to helping others? And we think part of it was the fact that she was an immigrant herself. And part of it was what she later said in life, after the success of the diary, of Anne's diary, was that you don't have to be special in order to help other people. Small acts of kindness can really do tremendous things. And that was a message that we felt the world needed right now. And so we're thrilled to kind of bring that. And the story of Miep, and how she was the person who scooped up Anne's diary after everyone was arrested in the annex, and kept it in a locked drawer for Anne when she came back. And then when she, when they found out that Anne and Margot were not going to come back from Bergen-Belsen, she gathered up the diary and walked it into Mr. Frank's office and laid it on his desk and said, this is the legacy of your daughter. And then together, they made sure that the diary was found as many readers as possible. And then after the war, Otto chose to live with Miep and Jan for 7 years until he remarried, which is pretty remarkable that this boss and employee could eventually move into being really family.
And I think that's a lot of what you feel in the episodes of the show, is about chosen family. And a lot about choices that, like you said, Miep, you guys reported that she kept saying, you know, anyone would have done it. But we know, looking at all of these issues with bystanders and allies and upstanders, that she was an original upstander. Like when called upon to action, she was in it and so committed. And it's beautifully done. I thought the contrast in some of the scenes where, you know, there's the scene where the friend is having the party and she's wearing the dress and the skating and the opulence versus these people hiding.
Yeah.
You really see how it was so tenuous for Anne every day. I mean, for me, every day, like, could she get food? Did they have the ration books? What was going to happen next? Who was going to...
Well, not only that, but how do you live with the fact that you get to go outside? Mm-hmm. You, in some respects, if you chose to, your life was not that different. I mean, as the Nazis were systematically ridding Amsterdam and the Netherlands of Jews, if you chose to collaborate or just turn away, mm-hmm. your life was relatively unaffected. And so people ask us, you know, what things did we take some dramatic liberties with, and versus what was we tried to stick to the historical record as much as we could. But in the example of the friend that you bring up, that was an invented character because we wanted to show that people who were in Miep's circumstance, many of whom did not make the same choice she did, and how the fact that Miep hiding this from her family, from her friends, caused huge rifts in her life. Even she and Jan, her husband, had to keep things hidden from each other.
Right.
And that put tension on their new marriage.
I think the way all of your shows have been, you know, from Grey's Anatomy to Fire Country, there's a lot of that dramatic tension about real relationships. And, you know, the so interesting from the smallest details to the largest details of what would you do? Like, I think it's a compelling show for people to think about, you know, when there's an accident in the street, who calls 911? Like, that's a very small participation that I've been involved in, or a bystander in different accidents. And, you know, I worked on a cruise ship for 6 years. I was a very highly trained first responder. So there's an accident, I'm going to call 911. I don't think about it, but not everybody thinks I need to do something. And she really stepped up.
Yeah. Because these people were her friends. They were, I mean, one of the amazing things about Amsterdam is how much of a kind of polyglot society it was. From the 1600s, Amsterdam had been a haven for Jews across Europe. And not only Jews, but also LGBTQ people. And so there was a real, people in Amsterdam could not wrap their heads around the fact that this was happening to them and their society. One of the things that we weren't able to tell, but I thought was really interesting, was the Dutch, after the Nazis invaded and took over the country, the Dutch were the only occupied people to launch a general strike against the Nazis. They basically said, you're doing this to our Jewish friends and neighbors, we're going to shut everything down and just not participate. And the Nazis couldn't believe that this was happening. They expected the Dutch to kind of welcome them with open arms, being fellow Aryans. And they brutally put this general strike down, to the point of leading the leaders of the general strike out into the street and just shooting them, which stopped the general strike. But that spirit there was, I think, always there. And in fact, when the Nazis first imposed Jews having to wear yellow stars, there were Dutch citizens who started to wear little orange flowers or little crosses to depict that they were Christians in defiance of the Nazis. They were like, if you're going to label the Jews as Jews, we're going to label ourselves as well. And these little acts of defiance, I think, were pretty remarkable for the time. But yes, Miep and Jan did these acts of resistance, and at the same time, not knowing how many other people were doing them, since everybody had to be very secretive about what they were doing.
And can you speak a little bit, when we were at the Federation event, you and your wife spoke a bit about how this story in a way chose you, that you were with your family, right, in Amsterdam?
We were with our family in Amsterdam. There's a wonderful documentary about Miep called Anne Frank Remembered that came out in the 90s, won the Academy Award for Best Documentary. And that was the first time we ever saw her. And she was well into her 90s. And was talking about Anne and finding the diary and her relationship to Anne. And then we took our kids to Amsterdam about 7 years ago. And while we were there, we were going through the Anne Frank Museum and reading the signs. And we were reading a sign about Miep. And our son had just graduated from Columbia. Very smart, but totally kind of hapless. In terms of, he was just starting out in life and he was figuring out things. And so we read about Miep's age when she first started working for Otto, and we were like, oh my God, she's him. She's just this young woman who does not know how anything works. And all of a sudden she has all of these lives in her hands. So the act of figuring things out is the story. She and Jan were not super spies. They didn't know what they were doing. They had to cobble it together as they went. And then, so we left the museum and we got on bikes. We rented bikes and we rode the route from the hidden annex to the Frank's apartment in Merwaterplein. It's about 45 minutes. We got there and we saw the Frank's apartment building, and then we were going to get ice cream, and we turned around and we saw there's a park across the street from the Frank's apartment, and we saw these 10-year-old girls doing cartwheels. And we had this revelation of that's Anne. Anne was just a 10-year-old girl doing cartwheels when history kind of overtook her. And so the desire to make these people human, to kind of de-sanctify them, to make them relatable, really, that became kind of our stated goal. I don't know if you've experienced this as well, but many times when I watch historical dramas, there's the language and the way that they're shot, there's a real barrier between the viewer and the people. They speak in a different way, they wear different clothes, and we really wanted to clear all that out and have them speak in a more contemporary way, mm-hmm. and shoot it in a more kind of realistic, grounded way, so that the audience, so that their barrier wasn't there, so that the audience could really immediately relate to these people. And as you say, put themselves in the shoes of the characters and say, what would I do?
What would I do? And so there's an interesting parallel that you, this story found you through your family, and you are a successful creator working with your spouse. So how did you and your spouse find each other and find your way into being writing partners?
We first met in 1988 in New York. I was a young theater director and Joan was a actress, and we met through some mutual friends. And Joan was always complaining about the fact that she hated auditioning, she wasn't having much success. But we would go to parties together and I would watch her tell these incredibly humiliating stories about her dating life before me. And I finally said to her, that's a show. You telling these humiliating stories is a show. Don't wait for somebody to give you a job. We can create a job for you. And so we started technically writing together. And really it was going into a rehearsal space with a tape recorder and recording her telling these stories and then transcribing them. And then that was a script. And so gradually over time, she started doing these shows and found a lot of success doing them. And we toured them around the country, and she had, regular sit downs at various theaters and kind of got a following for doing these. And then over time, we got some grants to write. I got a grant through the Williamstown Theater Festival to first write a play and then cast it with their young company and do it. And once again, I had no idea how to write a play. But what I would do is I would find people on the street and say, can I have 10 minutes? And then we'd sit down and I'd press play on the recorder and then I'd tell the story of the show. And in telling the story over and over again, I found that I started deepening the characters and discovering connections between them. And we all have that capacity. We're all storytellers. But I think a lot of us have a fear of actually taking a pen and putting it to paper. And so in telling, I kind of got over that fear. And then we started doing these adaptations of novellas, and that's kind of how we started. And by the early 2000s, we were playwright, director, actors in New York, and then kind of got pulled out to California because we did a reading of a play that we'd done off Broadway that had some success. And at this reading in LA, nobody came except a few of our friends. It was very disappointing. And this woman walked up to us at intermission of the reading and said, have you guys ever thought about writing TV? Because the dialogue in your play is really great. And we were like, we don't even know the TV's written. I mean, we didn't really think of that. And she was like, well, just stay an extra day, meet my boss, and see if it's something you're interested in. And we luckily leapt and said, we've been banging our head in New York for 12 years and met some success, but not as much as we'd like. Why don't we try this? So we moved out here with a three-year-old and just kind of, once we got out here, met with a lot of open doors and a lot of encouragement. And that's how we did it. But those 12 years in New York were really instrumental in allowing us to, teaching us how to rewrite ourselves, how to work with actors, how to be open. And writing television, since it's such a collaborative art form, is kind of perfect for us. So we've been very lucky. Wow. And we're at a point in our career now where we can really determine what kinds of shows we want to do. When we were first talking about Fire Country, the thing that drew us to that show was the fact that in California, there's a program for prison inmates to work on fire crews. And by doing that, they work time off their sentence. And so that felt like a great way to tell us family story about redemption and essentially retell the story of the prodigal son.
Well, all of your stories are focused on what we spoke about the night when I met you, was educating to activate and how does content shape culture. And
yes,
and I definitely feel that as a theme in A Small Light and Fire Country and some of the themes in the early Grey's Anatomy that you were part of. And I think another thing that's really resonates for me is, I know that you spoke about with Meep that after all that she did, that she still at times felt like she was a failure.
Yeah. Well, in her mind, the people who she was in charge of were arrested, and only one of them survived. Despite her best efforts, despite her walking into Gestapo headquarters to try and bribe them free, she really, I think, genuinely resisted people calling her a hero, because she just felt like she did what anybody would do. And, but I think that that idea was the thing that made her unique in a way. Mm-hmm. Was she famously said that if she hadn't done what she didn't think she would be able to live with herself. And so that idea, I think, is something that we can all adopt, especially now that we live in such a divided country and a divided world, and especially now that we see the rise of anti-Semitism again. I know when I was growing up, the attitude towards myself and many of the people that I was growing up with was, oh, that was in the past. We kind of found our way through that. There are other things that other people that are being discriminated against. But for the most part, we put that to bed. And I think that obviously we didn't. And obviously it's on the rise again. And obviously it's being weaponized by craven people to take power and frighten people. And so we have to be vigilant, and we have to educate, and we have to reach people at a young age. And one of the things that I'm most excited about is the fact that A Small Light is on Disney Plus, which means that it has a worldwide reach, and that it has a reach to young people who can access it, even if they might be in a community or even in a family where the ideas and aspirations of A Small Light might not necessarily be in vogue. They can have access to it. So I think that's exciting. And the other thing that I think we talked about the other night was, when you and I were growing up, I'm assuming, I know I was surrounded by survivors. Survivors were a big part of my life growing up. And so I had the opportunity to meet them, talk to them, hear their stories, and just know when you would see people's grandparents or parents who had tattoos, just know what that meant. That living testament was right there in front of you. And unfortunately, now that generation is leaving us. And so it's incumbent upon us to say, how do I keep the story alive? How do I reach that next generation who isn't going to be able to speak to those people one-on-one? And so in its own little way, a small light, I think can do that, can reach that generation and just bring these stories to people in a way that they find accessible and they find terrifying, but relatable.
I agree that it is at times terrifying, but incredibly relatable. And just the small moments where it becomes clear that, you know, people knew what was going on, you know, when he doesn't show up with the potatoes because that yucky man is there and he shows up with the extra strawberries. Like, it's clear that people knew and they wanted to participate in their way. They might not have been able to take the leap that Meep did instinctively. And so before we close, because you've been so generous with your time, I just am asking everybody on my show, before they leave me, because my book is coming out and my book is about feeling brave and taking on challenges. Obviously, we know that you and your wife have had this incredible experience with this story that chose you, really. But is there something additionally that maybe you're most proud of, or something where you're still reaching for a brave choice or a challenge, a story that you really want to bring to the world next, or something personal?
I think the challenge is that you find a story like Meep's that is so compelling, and it sets a high bar. You know, we're talking about a couple projects that we find exciting, but in some ways, I think that the story of Meep and Jan and the Dutch resistance is a once in a lifetime kind of thing, but we will certainly continue to tell stories that we feel like celebrate the human spirit and celebrate the fact of people in very real situations having to make difficult gray moral choices. Because I don't know, it's very easy to make a black and white choice. It's very easy to make one where you're like, of course I have to do this. To make choices that go on day after day that take a toll and that are gray, I think is much more challenging. And that's certainly what I aspire to, both in my work and in my family too.
Well, I myself, and I know a lot of other people, really appreciate that you've brought into our homes Grey's Anatomy, Fire Country, and now this incredible A Small Light. And I just loved what it said about her, that, you know, we make choices every day and we can choose to do something good. And I love the quote that the title comes from Meep, of that really anybody can turn a light on, a small light on in a dark room. And I really do think that's what you've done with showing people what was it like day to day there during the Holocaust, during the war, and that people can make a choice to really help someone else in the community.
Yeah. Yeah. That is Meep's lesson, is you don't have to be special. And even a secretary or a teenager. I mean, Anne always knew she was going to be a writer, but had no idea the impact that her diary would have. And did it because she loved writing. So thank you, Lisa, for having me on the show. And I hope your audience will check out A Small Light, because it's a show that we're very proud of.
So they can find it on Disney Plus.
And on Hulu.
And
on Nat Geo TV.
Oh, so many places. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Sure, Lisa. Thank you.